I can't stop listening to this, and I apologize in advance.
Fortune is passed by. Fortune is passed by is on the last
It brings up so many questions.
Fortune's passport.
Hello again, Squires, and welcome to another episode of Squirecast. My name is Matt. I am your goblin guide, guiding you through the weird and wonderful world of magic. And joining me this week is another one of our magical co-hosts, Steven. Just him this week, but that's cool. What's up, Steven, man?
Hello. I get introduced second this week. Feels good, man.
As you may be able to tell, both of us are really tired. Me especially. So, I've got a Coke candy. It's in the AM, which is weird for us. And we'll get into why that is in just a second.
I've got a Coke candy. What is wrong with you?
I have a Coke handy. It's got caffeine in it. I don't have a coffee machine at my place, and I can't be fucked making something, so.
I heard Coke candy, like a diminutive can.
Alright, so.
That's still good.
Should we get into why it's 8:30 in the goddamn morning, Steven?
Yes, we're okay, fucked up.
So, peel it back. That's
basically
peeling back the curtain just a little bit. Squires, as you may have listened to on the last episode of Squirecast, so we were gonna have Roberto Gonzalez on our show, pro tour player, man with a bow tie, all around cool dude, got a new podcast on MTGcast, and we were gonna expose him to you guys. Check it out, look, it's a new podcaster, cause we're so sick and awesome. And, what we're trying to do is sync up our time zones, you know, cause, you know, the man's in America, we're in Australia, gotta get that time zone sync.
We were off by 3 hours!
So we sat down to record this morning. It's 8:30 in the morning, you know, like we're thinking, alright, well that's gonna be around about 2:30 for him, that sounds pretty reasonable, that's what we agreed on. Pop on the Facebook chat, go, hey, Roberto, ready to record? He's very confused. It's not 2:30 there for him. In fact, I think we actually, yeah, we missed him by 3 hours. It was then 5:30, and I think he thought we were stuffing him around and weren't actually going to record this week or something. So we're very sorry, Roberto, that we probably, at the very least, confused you a fair bunch. But we are also sorry to ourselves, because we are up a hell of a lot earlier than we should be.
On a Sunday,
man.
But we're sorry, Roberto. Please love us.
So, if you are a new podcast starting out on mtgcast.com and you want to get represented, you can do...
Find someone else to do it better. For you.
We would love if you'd come on the show, but you probably need to do half the stuff for us, because apparently we're small children and need someone to hold our hand.
on the plus side, there is an upside to it. It means that when Roberto's on the show, we'll have Callum, and Callum can ask all the questions himself. True. Callum was so excited to talk to Roberto, and he was very disappointed when he couldn't make it to today's recording. So, we'll have some good news for him.
Yeah, so... I'm assuming you'll be listening to this, Callum. Roberto will be on a following episode. He has said that he wants to reschedule for another time, so we will get that sorted. But we still have a topic that we were going to be talking to Roberto about today that we can move forward with. Still going to be good. Still going to be relevant. It's all good. And we still got Weird Card of the Week, so I think we move into that first.
All right.
Okay, so Weird Card of the Week for this week. I think I'm going to start off with my one.
Yep.
My weird card for this week is a sorcery for 2 and a red from Morningtide. So, I guess for anyone who didn't know, the Lorwyn block, was kind of a sort of a fairy tale themed set. A lot of tribal stuff going on. And what I'm going to be talking about today is a giant themed card. Now, if you think back a couple episodes to the tribal show, no, it doesn't have tribal instant giant on it. I feel like it really should, because it's about throwing boulders, but whatever. So this is a card called Stomping Slabs. So for 2 and a red, this is a sorcery. Reveal the top 7 cards of your library, then put those cards on the bottom of your library in any order. Impressed by the effect so far, just looking at some cards, putting on the bottom. If a card named Stomping Slabs was revealed this way, Stomping Slabs deals 7 damage to target creature or player. So, yep. What we're looking at here is a card that could hypothetically deal 7 damage for 3, but what it's dependent on is for another copy of it to be in your top 7. So I think at the very least, you probably want to be running this card as a 4 of.
And the other thing is, every time you cast it, the chances that you're going to successfully get the 7 damage decreases because you've put a Stomping Slabs in your graveyard.
Yeah, exactly.
Well.
I mean,
So if you've got 4 copies, you'll have 1 in your hand, 1 in the top 7 of your deck, yep. Hypothetically. You play it. That goes to your graveyard. And the one you've revealed goes on the bottom of your library. So you've only got 2 accessible copies left.
And, think about this as a scenario, right? You have 4 copies in your deck. You've got 1 in your opening hand. You're like, oh, cool, that's fine. You play the card, turn 3. You flip over top 7. You see 2 more copies of Stomping Slabs. And you go, cool, I get to use the effect. Oh, no, wait. You put those 2 right on the bottom. And you now know that there's another copy, like 1 other copy of Stomping Slabs left in your deck that you're going to get to. And when you play it, if it isn't at least 7 cards above those, the other 2 that you revealed, it's a stone cold nothing.
Yeah. And don't forget as well, it says, if a card named Stomping Slabs is revealed this way, it deals 7 damage to target creature or player. But revealing multiple
it doesn't make the effect any more powerful.
Yeah. I mean, I can see this being run with a lot of Scry, maybe. And, you know, Elixir of Immortality, maybe. But I don't think I'd main deck any of this.
No. I mean, yeah. Like what you were saying before, I really feel like this effect would actually be better if it stacked. You know, like if it was like, alright, flip the top 7 cards of your library. Cool. For each card named Stomping Slab among these, deal 4 damage? That sounds reasonable. 3 damage, maybe?
Yeah.
Because then you could be looking at 3 for a bolt, or 6 for 3, which is really good. Or you could be doing 9.
I guess
you couldn't be doing 12 because you've already got 1.
Yeah.
Weird card. Weird card. And I don't think this is necessarily a good one either. But it's got sweet artwork of just a tiny little village of Kithkin, which are sort of small dwarf people, I guess, with enormous eyes, about to get their house crushed by some giant rolling boulders.
That'll learn them.
That'll learn them indeed. That'll learn them for building a village where boulders could hypothetically go. Yep.
Yep. What bothers me is the chances of you being able to crack off this card successfully are very small, even in a 60-card deck. But you want your removal to be fairly consistent. You know, I would happily trade a Stomping Slab for Lightning Bolt, but I mean, even... what is it? The Magma Jet, for example, which is cheaper and lets you scry, for example.
We're talking about cards with less damage here, but I think we're trading off the huge swingy aspect of this card for a card that we know does this. This is what this thing does.
And it will do it when you cast it, not potentially do it.
You don't want to be looking at a creature across the board from you. You go, all right, I need to kill that. So I'm gonna cast my Stomping Slabs, and I'm just gonna like close my eyes tight and just think real hard. All right, well that's my weird card for this week. Steven, what about you?
Yes, I've got a crappy weird card this week.
Kind.
it's a
It's from Torment. It's a 2/2 black creature. It's a for 2 and a black. It's called Grave Gouger, and it's a nightmare horror.
I feel like the creature type's a bit redundant. Nightmare horror.
Yeah, I think there may have been change in the creature type update. Anyway, the card reads, when Grave Gouger comes into play, remove up to 2 target cards in a single graveyard from the game. It's not, you know, that's okay. But when Grave Gouger leaves play, return the removed cards to their owner's graveyard. Are you fucking kidding me?
So what we're seeing here is the genesis of the mechanic that we now see on cards like Fiend Hunter and Banisher Priest. You know, those kind of guys that when they come into play, they exile a creature, and when they leave play, it comes back. You know, or even something like Brain Maggot, which when it comes in, it exiles something from their hand, and when it leaves play, it comes back. This is a type of creature known as a nightmare. And nightmares in Odyssey Block were creatures that they were in all colors. Basically, their thing was when they came into play, they exiled something. And when they left play, that thing came back. And depending on what color it was, changed what that thing was. Generally, I think red and blue got them as like a downside. So, you know, when it comes into play, exile a creature you control, but you get like an overcosted creature. Like, you get like an undercosted creature, that kind of thing. I mean, you get sick-ass stuff like World Gorger Dragon. When it comes into play, exile all permanents you control. And when it leaves play, return them all to the battlefield. But this is the sort of black aspect of it, which has since moved into white, you know. It's the when it comes into play, get rid of something of your opponent's. Unfortunately, what this guy is doing is something so minimal that it does nothing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a 2/2 for 3, isn't that like Grey Ogre equivalent? Yeah.
I mean, he's...
So he's a black Grey Ogre that with upside, I guess, but it's so insignificant. Most decks are probably not going to be running, most decks won't be disrupted by you exiling two cards from their graveyard. Most decks. I'm not saying all decks, most decks. But most decks are also well equipped to remove a 2/2 from the board, so they can get those cards back if they do need them.
This kind of thing, we exile things from someone's graveyard. It's a useful thing against people who actually have stuff with their graveyard, right? Like, it's one of those things where if someone's doing something with their graveyard, they're reanimating, dredging, whatever, you really want to be able to deal with that. I mean, let's say, for example, right, Grave Gouger, completely replaced by Bajuka Bog. You know? Bajuka Bog's a land. It was, what, common, I think? Maybe uncommon from Zendikar block? Comes in tapped. Taps for black. When it comes into play, exile target player's graveyard. Just gone. There's none of this shenanigans that when it leaves the battlefield, return it. No. It's just gone.
Yeah. And it makes mana. Grave Gouger doesn't make mana.
I mean, Grave Gouger could attack and block.
So could a land, if you tried hard enough.
If you really thought about it, come on.
But you see, there are other crappy cards that do a better job than this card. I pointed out a card called Awful Snout, which is, it's also from Morningtide. Matt. It's a 2/2 for 3, same cost, same power toughness. It has Flash and Evoke for 1 black, meaning that, you know, you can play it for its Evoke cost, but it's immediately sacrificed. And its effect is when Awful Snout leaves play, remove target card in a graveyard from the game. There's none of this temporary exile, it's just fuck it, get rid of it, and you get a creature as well.
It's also worth noting, Awful Snout, it's from, you know, Lorwyn block, it's one of the elementals with Evoke, it's fucking weird looking. This is a centre pig. It's pig's face with like a huge centipede body, and its legs are worms. And it's got antlers, I think.
It's kind of adorable.
Is it?
I want to hug it. Shout out to Alex Hawley Orlandelli, if you're listening to this, because I love your art.
They also did the artwork.
I love the look of this thing.
Bringing it full circle.
Oh.
What?
Wow, we're tired.
Yeah.
Awesome. Excellent.
Woo!
I'm eating Sesame Seed things. I don't care anymore.
Alright, so, hey Steven. You ready to talk about some Elder Dragons?
I'm not sure. What's the time? 9:03 a.m. Okay. Yeah, okay.
That's time for Elder Dragons, Steven. 9 a.m. That's Elder Dragon time. What?
But now the question is... But the thing is, with Elder Dragons, where do we start?
Why don't we start at the very beginning? Thanks for the segue.
It's a very good place to start.
So, Elder Dragons, what are we talking about? What are we talking about? I feel like I ask myself that every single week. So, Elder Dragons are something that are relevant right now because, Dragons of Tarkir spoilers have finished. Steven and I were actually having a conversation at like 2 a.m. in the morning when the full spoiler decided to kick off, and well, that delayed me going home by about an hour. But
as opposed to 2 a.m. Yep. in the afternoon, yep. by the way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Shut up. Anyway, one of the big things of Dragons of Tarkir is the big mythic dragon lords that are headlining the set, you know, the big leaders of the dragon broods, sort of in place of the Khans, and these are Elder Dragons. Right on their type line says it right there. Legendary creature, Elder Dragon. And, for someone who hasn't been playing for a long time, this might not be all that relevant. It might just feel like, okay, well that's cool, they're old dragons. That's interesting. But in Magic, Elder Dragon means something very specific. It refers to what was previously, before these guys, five creatures. Five Elder Dragons, back from 1994. So, long, long time ago.
Fuck.
Year after we were born, Steven. Yep.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
So, two...
we're as old as Magic the Gathering.
2 decades ago, we were introduced to the original five Elder Dragons. And basically, these guys were sort of the headline cards, as I believe it, of, like, casual badassery, you know? They say Elder Dragon, they're, you know, they're ancient, unstoppable forces of primordial dragon power. You know, there was a dragon's war, and these were the five that survived. That kind of thing. There's a whole lore, behind these guys. And unfortunately, that's a area of my lore expertise, that is lacking, unfortunately. So, highly recommend checking out, Card Advantage does flavor every now and then. And, whenever they have, whenever they do a flavor show, I think they did one on Nicol Bolas, which talked about Elder Dragons, because we're gonna get into him a little bit later. CJ Schrader on there knows a lot more about this than we would. But, thank you, Luna. Good to know you're up at 9 a.m. So, why don't we get into the original Elder Dragons, Steven? Because that's what we're going to be doing this episode. We're going to be comparing the old to the new. Old versus new. And, see how the old Elder Dragons stack up to the new ones.
Alright, so, well, yeah.
Let's start.
There were so many of them.
There's five, right? So we're going to be reading through them all. Let's look at Arcadis Saboth.
Yeah. Okay, so Arcadis Saboth is a set... Okay, basically all these dragons have the following in common. They are flying 7/7 Elder Dragons, and they tie up your mana somehow. So with Arcadis Saboth, 7/7 Elder Dragon with flying, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Arcadis Saboth unless you pay green, white, blue, one of each of its colors. Each untapped creature you can... I didn't actually say it's mana cost. Wow, it is early in the morning. Okay, These dragons also cost 8, and it's, you know, 6 specifically colored mana and 2 colorless. So Arcady Saboth is 2 colorless, 2 green, 2 white, 2 blue.
Which, I mean, just think back to the days of Magic, Stephen, where, like, dual lands were, you know, a rare oddity, but basically the only real way to fix your mana. And trying to get this shit happening.
You could actually get dual lands back in 1994.
Yeah, I bet dual lands are probably like $10 a pop.
If you're out there and you're a golden oldie who was playing Magic around about the time of this happening, please let us know, because we want to know what it was like living in that era. That must have been friggin' great. Not to imply that you're old, but just wise.
I believe you actually just call them a golden oldie.
Right. A golden oldie,
Let's get into Arcady Saboth, mate.
Sorry. So, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Arcady Saboth unless you pay green, white, blue. Each untapped creature you control gets +2/+0/+2, as long as it's not attacking. And then it has an activated ability, white, Arcady Saboth gets +0/+1 till end of turn.
So he's got butt breathing. Or sun pants.
Really?
Yeah, so it's, I mean, pay red to get +1 power, that's fire breathing, right?
It's got inflatable pants. Alright.
So what we're looking at here is a 7/7 for 8 in a ridiculous set of mana at the time. I mean, it's possible now, but it still seems like this could trip you up. 2 green, 2 white, 2 blue, and 2 colorless. That you have to pay for every single turn. Gives all your creatures a bigger butt. As long as they're not attacking. So I guess he's defensive. And he can pump his ass. So, you know, all the things that were going to kill your 7/7 flyer with damage don't, I guess.
But there is still Souls to Plowshares at the time, I'm sure.
Yep.
But I don't know how to feel about this card. It's defensive. That's about it, really. Although, I suppose, if you have a whole bunch of creatures, right, they get bigger asses if they're not attacking. So you can quite happily swing in with your 7/7 knowing that your your big ass creatures will, be on the defensive when your opponent takes their turn.
Now, I say he's defensive, but what I could be saying is that he works better in a deck that maybe cares about toughness. For example, I have a legendary creature that headlines a commander deck of mine. He costs green, white, black, so you're in a fourth color, but whatever. He is a 0/5, and his name is Darren the Siege Tower. He gives all creatures the ability on the battlefield. They deal damage equal to their toughness in combat rather than their power. So that turns Arcady Saboth into a 7/7 fire breather, which is kind of cool. Again?
That's cool.
Kind of outmatched these days.
Yeah. I mean, how do you feel about the 7/7 for 8? Just as a thing. Like, if it was a vanilla 7/7. Or say 7/7 with flying for 8. 7/7 with
flying for 8 is reasonable, but something I wouldn't expect past, like, uncommon. Because this is a Elder Dragon legend. You know, he's meant to be something big, impressive. And sure, he's a 7/7, that's pretty big. But
at the time, this must have been, I mean, first of all, like, this is the first set of golden cards and the first cycle of creatures as well.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. You know, this must have been, it must have been friggin' awesome to open up one of these in a pack. And I'm sure with the power level at the time, these must have been absolutely unstoppable.
Here's the thing, right? Compare them to what as far as I can tell, used to be the biggest card in Magic at the time was Lord of the Pit, who was also a 7/7 flyer for 7? What does Lord of the Pit cost? At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice a creature or he deals 7 damage to you. So he's like, so, you know, so these guys, you know, a 7/7 for 7 with, like, less of a downside must have seemed awesome, you know?
Lord of the Pit costs 4 and 3 black.
And he's a 7/7 flying trample demon. Beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice a creature other than Lord of the Pit. If you can't, it deals 7 damage to you. So, I mean, you know, that's a big, thing you're getting into with this demon. But these guys, hey, what's up? Pay 1 mana more in a ridiculous set of colors and you get a 7/7.
But the other thing is, it ties up your mana. Like, you're forced to... I mean, it's not a cumulative upkeep, but it is a recurring upkeep cost. And let's say you've cast Arcady Saboth on, I guess it'd be turn 8, wouldn't it?
On turn 9, you have 3 less mana.
Yeah, so you're down to 5 mana, and yeah. So, I don't know.
Think about it this way, right? Like, these dragons, I mean, we're gonna get into them in just a second, the other ones, but they all have this text where at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice them unless you pay their colors. That means that, I mean, realistically, they don't cost 8, they cost 11. Because they cost 8, and then next turn they cost 3. So, like, they're, like, all up. You're spending 11 for these. But, I mean, you know, like, this is a bygone era. Creatures have changed a lot, in Magic since then. You know, before, the creatures didn't match up well to the extremely powerful removal spells that they had. But now, you know, we're seeing creatures that are hard for people to deal with, just full stop. And, you know, kick these guys' butts. This guy has some pretty sick artwork, too. I mean, like, we're talking, like, old school fantasy style, but he's pretty cool.
I love the artist's name. It's Edward Beard Jr. Sick. I want to find him and hug him.
Edward Beard. So, I mean, Arcady Saboth is this big pink demon with, like, you know, he's got claws and scales and all that regular good stuff. He's got tusks and, like, little winged bits inside of his head, big wings. He's got a cape on. He's a dragon wearing a cape.
He's a dragon with a cape.
And he appears to be inside of some kind of castle.
Wow. He's also entirely pink.
He is
pink.
Very pink.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm not a fan of this card.
Mm-hmm. Me neither. Arcady Saboth? Sorry, mate. You get a big thumbs down.
I'm sure he had his heyday, but it's not now.
I don't even know about that, dude. But, I mean, that's just us speculating. So, moving on to our next Elder Dragon. Again, I mean, this name sounds so much more awesome than some of these cards live up to. And I'm sorry if it feels like we're just kind of shitting all over these cards, but they're not great. And I think this is a thing to talk about. It's a history lesson, you know? To go in and be like, look, I mean, this is what it used to be like. this is like looking at colonial housing and being like, holy shit. How did we do this?
You go to Africa and you see some mud huts and go, yep, that's the old Waddle and Dole. Don't do that anymore. Pretty crap job. Shit all over people's houses. If you like Arcady Saboth, we apologize. We're just not personal fans.
So, the next one, I really quite like the concept of. This is Chromium. Chromium is a legendary creature, Elder Dragon, 7/7 for 2, white, blue, black. So, Esper colors. That's a thing as well, is that these dragons are in what would later become the Shard colors. Esper, Bant, Grixis, Naya, and Jund. So, our Chromium, is a metal dragon. And I don't mean that in that he's badass, because he is badass. But he's made of metal. Like a robot. Like a shiny ass fucking robot.
Honestly, who would sit there listening to the podcast, hear you say, oh yeah, it's a metal dragon, and the first thing they think is, oh, it must be
a really badass rockstar dragon instead of thinking, oh, it must just be a metal instead dragon. Instead of
like, listening to literally what I'm saying, they add something else into it, yeah. Alright, so, anyway. Much like Arcady Sabbath, the beginning of your upkeep, you must pay black, blue, white during your upkeep, or chromium is buried. Or, you know, sacrifice chromium. So, what is chromium's special deal? You know, 7/7 flyer, that's all pretty up and up. For 8, okay, cool. You gotta pay 3 mana every upkeep to keep it around, alright, cool. What is this deal? Rampage 2. What is Rampage? Well, let me tell you. Rampage says, whenever this creature becomes blocked, it gets the Rampage bonus, in this case, +2/+2, until end of turn for each creature blocking it beyond the first. So what we're looking at here, ladies and gentlemen, is a creature that becomes a 9/9 if it gets blocked by two things.
It's quite a strange ability. But what it's essentially saying is, let me attack you with a 7/7 or I will wreck your shit.
Yeah, and it also means, like, you're gonna have to have something that's big enough to deal with my creature, because you can't just keep blocking it with more creatures to try and stack up the damage, because it's just gonna keep getting bigger. Like, I can't just be like, alright, I'm just gonna put 4 creatures in front of it. You know, this is a 1/1, this is a 1/1, this is a 2/2, and this is a 4/4. You know, I've got enough power to kill your guy now, yay. Yeah, I get +2/+2, I'm a 9/9. Oh. Fuck.
Rampage is a strange ability really as well. I mean, it's not, you know, it's strange as a concept, but also, only 16 cards in Magic have it. And also, it's also been redone as a non-keyworded ability seen on cards like Beastmaster's Mage Mark. You know, that grant, you know, for example, Beastmaster's Mage Mark is an enchantment from Guild Pact, which is 2 and a green, enchant creature. Creatures you control that are enchanted get +1/+1. Whenever a creature you control that's enchanted becomes blocked, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each creature blocked.
And see, that's even better version of Rampage. Because it just gets +1/+1 if it becomes blocked. And then another +1/+1 if it becomes blocked by a second creature. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is, I'm a 7/7. If I become blocked, I am a 7/7. If I get blocked by two things, I'm a 9/9. But beyond that, I'm just a 7/7.
Yeah. So Rampage only grants
the bonus past the first one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shit.
So Chromium, aside from his badass, you know, like metallic, robotic, beam spouting dragonness, dragonacity, it's not great. I mean, I think he is the only one among these that has like a keyword on him, you know, like a mechanic. Rampage was a thing for legends, something that they put on things. It doesn't work. It has nothing to do with him as a dragon. There's nothing about him that's particularly metallic, you know, artifacty that we would come to expect.
Yeah. It's trying to discourage you from blocking with multiple creatures. That's the problem. If you block with one creature, it's a, you know, a static set, you know, 7/7 that does nothing.
Yeah.
So if, yeah, I don't know. I'm not a fan either.
Yeah.
It just,
now, the next one on the list, do we want to go into him right now or do we want to save him for later?
Save him for last.
Sounds good to me. So, Steven.
Because he may also be the only good one.
Skipping over to Palladius Mors. What does Palladius Mors do, Steven? Yeah.
So, Palladius Mors is a, once again, 7/7 Elder Dragon for 2 colorless, 2 red, 2 green, 2 white. So, Yeah. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Palladius Mors unless you pay red, green, white. And it has flying and trample. Or flamble.
It has flamble.
And that's it. That's all it is. It's a 7/7 with flamble.
You have to keep paying to keep around.
Paying for. Like, repeated echo cost.
Oh boy.
I would probably prefer this over Arcades and Chromium, though. Because It does have trample.
This is quite easily for me, number two.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to be getting into best one in just a second, and it's pretty clear that he's the best one. But Palladius Mors, is it? Yeah, Palladius Mors is second.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's not much more we can say about it, really. It's a flying, trampling creature.
I mean,
it does stuff. Yeah. It's big.
Also, apparently, according to lore, Palladius Mors is female. So that's interesting. So...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
she's badass.
She is badass. And I think the thing here is that, as opposed to a lot of the other designs that we see for these elder dragons, Palladius Mors actually does something that you would want your giant 7-7 to do, right? I mean, like, because it does, I'm assuming Trample would come in here in a very similar space to Rampage, right? It discourages your opponent from blocking. But instead of saying, if you block me, with multiple creatures, I'm going to be too big for you to do that. So just chump block me with your little flyers. I'm just a big guy. You block me, and you're not big enough to kill me. You're going to take damage. You're going to take it right in the face. And like, so it's just a much more useful ability here. I mean, trample is trample is trample, plus flying is flample, and it's cool.
Mm. Like, trample is an unreasonably good effect for big creatures. I've discovered. I say not unreasonably good, but it is a really, really powerful effect. So, yeah, I definitely want trample on my 7-7 player.
Alright.
Alright. Hey, what about the next one?
So, number four on the list of Elder Dragons, which I think I'd probably rate this guy number three, is, the Victus Asmadi. Cool name. 7-7 flyer. Elder Dragon. For two, black, red, green, as we've come to expect. This is Jund colors. And Vivectus Asmadi. Beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Vivectus Asmadi unless you pay black, red, green. Now, Vivectus Asmadi has three activated abilities. For black, Vivectus Asmadi gets +1/+0 until end of turn. For red, Vivectus Asmadi gets +1/+0 until end of turn. And for green, Vivectus Asmadi gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
I'm assuming that if this card were to be reprinted, it would be printed as one line and it'd be,
it's like a triple
black
hybrid symbol. You may pay black or green. If you do, Vivectus Asmadi gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
So, he's got like three sets of fire breathing, that's great. But, okay, you paid 8 mana for him. So it means you have access to a lot of mana, but you're tying 3 of that mana up to pay the upkeep cost every time, leaving you with 5?
Yep.
Like, that's still good. It's still +5/+0 if you can sink all your mana into it, but...
Yeah, I mean, think about it, right? Like, you play your Elder Dragon. Let's assume your opponent has no flyers. Whatever, that's still a hype. That's a possibility. You play your 7-7 flyer. Next turn, you pay 3 to keep it around. You don't play a land, because this is turn 9 now. You probably don't have... Maybe you draw one off the top, whatever. You then pump 5 mana into Vector's Mighty. It doesn't really matter what colors it is, which is awesome. Because, I mean, let's say you're in 3 colors, right? And he just had fire breathing. Well, your red mana is going to be in a much smaller supply, and not all of your mana, as opposed to the other colors. So this is basically a thing that just says, yeah, just pump all your mana into me. It doesn't really matter what colors it is, as long as you're in Jund colors. I get +5/+0 until end of turn, and I hit someone for 12. Then next turn, you just do it again and win.
Yeah. Oh, fuck them. Yeah, that's up. At the time, it must have been a powerhouse as well. What's the rating on this guy?
Seems like people are rating it out of this cycle, they're rating it number 2. So he is rated at 3.5 out of 5.
Well. Also, the artwork was done by a different artist for this guy. This was done by a person called Andy Russo. And I apologize, man. Or gal. I'm not... hold on. Andy Russo. I don't want to insult. I don't know. Alright. I'm sorry, dude. but Vivectus Asmati looks like a startled goat.
Ah!
Look at that artwork.
Yeah, he's got a very sort of like a salamander-esque looking dragon, you know, just sort of off to the one side, like a doodle that I would do in the side of my math book, you know?
I mean, Palladium Wars looks pretty bad. It's pretty dodgy as well.
But like badass in the kind of way that I would actually expect to see on like the cover of like a fantasy book, you know?
Yeah. I mean, Palladium Wars is bathed in the red glow of what I'm assuming is a giant pile of flaming corpses. Yeah. And he's just yelling at a bonfire. And, I guess that's kind of badass.
Yeah, there's some skeletons and stuff. It's in a big cave. It's rah.
But Vivectus is a startled goat. You can't get past that.
It's like a yearbook photo or something like that, where he's just like, I'm gonna stare wistfully off into the distance, and ends up just looking.
What?
And then the yearbook text is, some men just want to watch the world burn.
No, it's the guy that's trying to be smart. It's, some men just want to watch the world burn. I'd rather catch up on Breaking Bad. Vivectus Asmati staring wistfully off into the distance. So, Vivectus Asmati, kind of cool. Like I said, probably number 3 out of the dragons. Maybe 2nd, I don't know. Palladius Mors is there. Trample, I think, is a more powerful ability than fire breathing in 3 colors.
That said, though, if I had a Jund commander deck, I would definitely run Vivectus.
Really?
Like, without a doubt. Yep. I understand that there are a lot of probably better things that I could run, but I think Vivectus would probably be an understated threat.
You know, you've got a point.
Like, you might not get as much attention as other big dangerous creatures in Jund, and then when it's too late, you chuck all your mana in them.
I mean, that's one of these things where we think about for these Elder Dragons, right? You know, they've got to have a cool factor to them, got to be a thing that, you know, this is something that can win the game, right? And Vivectus Asmati can just attack. Yeah, I don't have anything to block him. Alright, pump 9 mana into him. You're dead. What?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, can't be underestimated. Arcadia Sabbath can't really do that. Just a 7/7 that can buff his ass. Chromium, just a 7/7 that gets bigger if you block it with a couple of guys. Palladius Mors. Yeah. Trample. It's not going to get any bigger, but it's just going to be hard to deal with generally. Vivectus Asmati can be as big as you want.
Now, that said, I think Chromium, with the right suit, could be badass too.
Give Chromium Trample, and yes, must and be also, blocked. Yeah.
I was going to say, must be blocked, but whatever it is, lure, or what's the enchantment that you use in your Doran deck?
Oh, that's a green-black enchantment, that wouldn't work here.
If you weren't playing Commander.
Hmm? No, but I mean the enchantment I'm thinking of, I can't remember the name of it, it's from Shadowmoor, and it actually cares if the creature is green and if the creature is black. So it would get the black bonus.
Box.
But it's, God, I can't remember the name off my head, but it's 4 green-black hybrid for an enchantment aura. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 if it's green and +1/+1 if it's black. If it's green, all creatures that are able to block it must block it, and if it's black, it gets Death Touch.
But now, what was that other weird card that we looked at months ago? We've been doing this for months. A couple months ago. The Leprechaun card.
Aislinn Leprechaun?
Yeah.
Doesn't that just throw everything under the Leprechaun bus?
Yeah, you know what? Wait, no, there was a card we spoke
throw
about.
Everything under the Leprechaun bus? Bumping my microphone. God damn.
I'll be honest, I have no idea what I'm talking about anymore.
Good episode.
I was trying to think of a needlessly complicated way to make Chromium green so that you could use that enchantment. So just ignore me, just carry on. Let's go to the last
okay.
Elder Dragon.
The last Elder Dragon.
And the...
Oh, excuse me.
And those of you who weren't expecting it, I'm sure the people out there who are expecting this know what's coming, but if you're not expecting it, guess who the last one is.
I already actually said his name, like, out loud.
Oh, damn it. It's Nicol MF Brawlus.
Yeah, it's our old buddy Nicol.
So he's 7/7 Elder Dragon, 2 colorless, 2 blue, black, red.
Yep. Two blue, two black, two red.
I think I may have had a
stroke. Ugh.
Anyway, flying. So yeah, okay, so he's a 7/7 with flying. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Nick or Bolas unless you pay, blue, black, red. But, and this is a big but, whenever Nick or Bolas deals damage to an opponent, that player discards his or her hand. There is a reason this is the best card in the cycle.
It's because it actually does something.
And it's yeah. good.
I mean, like this isn't an ability you want attached to something like this, right? Like, your opponent's going to be stockpiling things to try and deal with it, try and put some threats on the board. I mean, sure, we're going to be talking about a thing that's going to be swinging as early as turn 9, but, you know, it's... If your opponent has anything in their hand... Oh, sorry, they're gone. Hit you, sorry, they're gone. By the way, you take 7, but your hand's gone.
Yeah, so there's just not... So, if you are forced to discard your hand, there's nothing you can do. You know, unless you luck into something. But, yeah, it's... Like, losing your hand is extremely detrimental in a Magic game.
Your opponent's like, aha, Wrath of God, perfect. Alright, cool. I'm gonna cast this next turn. Hit you with Nicol Bolas, you discard your hand.
See, now, this entire the whole cycle was printed in Legends, Masters Edition 2, and Chronicles. But only Nicol Bolas made it onto the time-shifted sheet in Time Spiral and from the Vault Dragons. Because it's good. Because it's still good. It still holds up.
This is something that you would still want to run in a deck. And people would still want to run as a commander. Because when we talk about commander as a format, one of our favorite formats on this show, its original name is EDH, which stands for Elder Dragon Highlander, which used to be the only 5 things you could choose as your legendary creature were these Elder Dragons. These were your choices. These were the 5 commanders. And I think only one of them actually still holds up as something that you would want to run as your commander. That's so good. And we should also note, Nicol Bolas, buddy, your old artwork's kind of dorky.
Yeah, once again, Edward Beard Jr., well done. Is it all these other dragons, you know, you've got Arcadius Sabaoth in his cape, Chromium yelling at something, Palladium Moors also yelling at something, and Vayvectus the goat. But then Nicol Bolas is reclining and reading.
Now, I mean,
I suppose it highlights that he's probably he's the most intelligent of the dragons.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's meant to be the most intelligent. He's meant to be the most, scheming, the most kind of like classic comic book villainy of hanging back, planning behind the scenes.
To be fair, he does kill the other 4.
He does. He survives.
And he becomes one of the main villains of the multiverse. Mm-hmm. So he's quite a badass. I wonder if that was due to the fact that he was such a popular card. Like, the story was shaped around his popularity.
I don't really know whether this is sort of like a chicken and egg scenario, because I know that he featured in the old books as a thing. He was just sort of a bad guy. The Legends set had a book, I don't think it was actually called Legends, it might be called something else. But basically there was sort of this dark tower thing, and Nicol Bolas was the manipulative dark emperor behind that. He was the puppet master pulling the strings. He was a bad guy back then. Now, I know he had a story that was woven in through a thing. He was a character, but mending happens. Time Spiral block. Turns out Nicol Bolas is a planeswalker. Don't know if we knew that beforehand. Nicol Bolas loses his spark, and being Nicol Bolas wants the power back, so now he's a big bad guy. And I don't know, because we weren't around at the time, what it was like for someone who maybe already knew Nicol Bolas as a card to be going into Shards of Alara see Nicopolis as the bad guy. And you're like, what? Nicopolis.
All these years, it
and
was
you
Nicole.
See the guy reading the book, and then you see the Planeswalker card, and you're like, what? They're the same guy.
Yeah. Also, in his original artwork, Nicopolis has tiny horns.
Yeah, he does.
He's had a lot of time to cultivate those.
Yeah,
glasses.
And you know when we see him get his sweet artwork in From the Vault Dragons, the very first From the Vault, should be noted when they're first making this brand new awesome product that they're going to foil stuff out and you know make some amazing reprints. But they put Nicopolis right there, so he's an enormous dragon in there. That's what we see him. In sort of more of his, like, actual awesome style, but he doesn't have the distinctive... Jeez, all the hiccups today. Nicopolis horns. And he doesn't have the floating gem thing. The phlegm.
The phlegm.
He doesn't have the nickel phlegm.
I'm sure he gains that at some point. I want to know what that egg is.
All right.
But, yeah. So Nicopolis, everyone. He is the legend among legends.
I know Nicopolis. That phlegm in front of, you know, between his horns is probably, like, him as an egg that he captured from a time stream and is keeping as, like, a Horcrux sort of thing.
I would not be surprised
yeah,
if that
like
was
he, like, he, like, he has himself as an egg, you know, just, like, sitting between his horns and he's like, you know, if something fucking happens to me, I'm just gonna be born again. Or I'm gonna steal the life force from myself. To live.
To make sure there's cheese in the fridge next week.
Yep. But...
Oh, sorry, you were there for that episode.
Well, I mean, he's Nicopolis, right? So he has to, like, plan everything, like, 10,000 years in advance.
And way more complicated than it needs to be.
I want cheese to be in the fridge next week because I'm feeling like a sandwich at that point, so I need to manipulate a planeswalker to kill their family. So that plane will be destroyed, so that the crops there will become, like, envied by a planeswalker who was there. We'll go to another plane, and he'll want to, you know, breed cows that will produce milk, that will be turned into cheese, that rivals what was on that plane, and then I'll have that cheese and it'll be great.
You know, that sounds like Bolas to me. Everyone pictures him. I mean, in his artwork, he's a massive, massive yeah. dragon. But I picture him sounding like a gawky teenager.
Hello there. I am Nicopolis. Hello.
I'm gonna make these things work for me and me
bow
only.
Bow before me.
I'll have the power I deserve.
Bow before Nicopolis. Sarkhan, I will destroy your mind.
So, yes, that is Nicopolis' voice
yeah.
for me.
Yeah.
Which is why we ignore headcanon.
Yes, that's why we, rightfully so, skip right past headcanon and go right to the real stuff. So,
those are the original legendary Elder Dragons.
So when, you know, Wizards is bringing back the type line, bringing back Elder Dragon as a type, they gotta be thinking that it's gotta compare to these guys. And whilst they're not great cards, they have a cool factor to them that I think be ignored, you know? They are classic cards. Big, scary dragon, well not scary, big, distinctive dragons, you know, they're in three colors, they've all got an ability. One of them's amazing. One of them's the, you know, the big villain for Magic. And, you know, these guys had an attachment to the story and a whole mystique around them. So you gotta think, when Wizards is bringing back Elder Dragon, they gotta have the game set to A, you know?
So, here's the rub. In Phaedra Forge, there was a cycle of five legendary mm-hmm. dragons, okay? So you had Dromokhar, the Eternal, Ojutai, Soul of Winter, Silumgard, the Drifting Death, Kolaghan, the Storm's Fury, and Ataka, World Render. And these were dragons that were around at the time of Fate Reforged. And by the time Dragons of Tarkir rolls around, they're actually dragon lords. They're older, they're wiser, and now they run what used to be the
And, you know, 1,280 years have passed. And I think putting Elder on their type line is a really nice way of wizards showing us, because we see that in the artwork as well, and the evolution of their abilities, and their size as well, that these guys have lived for a long time, you know? They were old at the time we saw them in Fate Reforged. They've been around for maybe a couple of decades, something like that. But, or maybe even 100 years, we don't know. But now, they are super ingrained into Tarkir. They are part of the fabric of reality of this plane. They are important pinnacles of everything. And I really like that they put Elder Dragon on there, because it shows that these are now huge, impactful beings on Tarkir. And they're fucking old.
So shall we go through... So shall we go through these Elder Dragons and then compare them to their Fate Reforged counterpart as well?
Yeah, I mean, we might do that if we have time. I mean the FIRF versions of these dragons, something people might be familiar with. I think I actually remember talking about a Tarka during spoilers for FIRF, to be honest. But, you know, let's go through these Elder Dragons. We haven't even touched on them in the show.
All right, you
okay,
go.
Okay, well, let's start off with Dragon Lord Dromoka. This might actually be my favorite out of them all, to be honest. And I'm getting
Me
so
too.
Happy to maybe open one of these at the pre-release. So, I mean, it's worth noting, these cards are in two colors, and only one of each blip of color. So they're of a hell of a lot easier, mono-wise, like color-wise, to cast than the original Elder Dragons. So, for 4, green, white, Dromoka is a 5/7 Elder Dragon. Okay. So, 2 less than an original Elder Dragon, but she's got the same butt, and she's got 2 less power. Okay. Seems reasonable.
Not bad. Like, so far, it's okay.
Dromoka can't be countered. Okay. So, for your big game-ending threat, you don't want it to be countered. That's good. She's got flying. Useful. She's got lifelink, which is awesome.
Super useful.
And your opponent can't cast spells during your turn.
That's fucked, mate.
And I mean, it shows something so much more in the design of these dragon lords, that they're not, alright, I'm a big dragon, you have to pay to keep me around, here's the thing I do. You know, I have trample. Can't be countered, lifelink, can't cast spells during my turn. Like, 3 distinctive things. This is who I am.
I was just saying, this illustrates quite well how Magic the Gathering has changed in the last 20 years, and seeing, look, you can have a massive creature with multiple abilities for 6 mana instead of 8, and you don't have to keep paying for it. There's so much removal and ways to deal with creatures that it's no longer necessary to make the big ones just hard to keep around.
And they've figured out that creatures can be better, you know, and that creatures used to be really crap, and that removal used to be really good. There were so many incentives back in these old sets to not play creatures, because, man, they were going to get fucked up.
Yeah.
So, Dragon Lord Dromoka does a fantastic job of illustrating flavorfully Dromoka's thing. She's an impenetrable hide. You know, she can't be countered. Nothing can touch her, magic-wise. She's, big. She's hard to kill. 7 toughness is huge. And she protects her own. Your opponent can't cast spells during your turn. She's like, look, this is my turn. We're doing things my way. Fairly. You know, it's green, white. It's like, I'm a huge creature, and you're gonna play by my rules.
You can do your thing in your own time, but I'm busy first.
Let me do my thing. Don't interrupt me while I'm talking. And Lifelink as well. So, yeah. You know, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, big fan of Dromoka.
Oh, she's pretty good.
And Steven's pretty tired.
Mm. I am. I'm going to bed as soon as we finish.
A bit of a nappy nap.
But, oh yeah. Alright, so shall we go move on to our next Dragon Lord? Yeah. Alright, so our next Dragon Lord is Dragon Lord Ojutai, who is a 5-4 for 3 white-blue. And it reads, flying, Dragon Lord Ojutai has hexproof as long as it's untapped. And that's a thing we're seeing quite a lot of lately. Whenever Dragon Lord Ojutai deals combat damage to a player, look at the top 3 cards in your library. Put one of them into your hand, then the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. Is that Impulse?
It's not quite Impulse. Impulse is 4 cards. It's actually a... Well, there's a card in Dragon's Retreat here that does that, which is, Anticipate?
Ah.
One in a blue for instance that does exactly this.
So, yeah, and also I'm very interested in the hexproof as long as it's untapped as well.
But
that, like, conditional hexproof is a thing we're seeing a lot more of lately as well. You know, things like Prognostic Sphinx as well.
Yeah. Oh, you mean activate? Yeah, that's got activated hexproof.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that they want for bigger blue flyers to have. Because, of course, hexproof is something that protects them. But hexproof on a creature can be quite hard to deal with, especially if your opponent's removal is, like, targeted, that kind of thing. So I really like Ojutai's flavor here because he's the grand teacher. He's this enigmatic, wise, ancient being that teaches people, and he hangs back, you know. He's impossible to touch. He's this sort of, like, unfathomable force. But he can get into the action. And once he gets into the action, that's when you can deal with him, you know? Once he swoops down off his perch and goes to ice breath you, that's when you can, like, land your assault. But until then, shit out of luck, bro. He's just hiding back.
And in addition to sort of wading into combat, he's also, I guess, giving you knowledge. Because isn't that what the former Jeskai clan was about? Enlightenment. Yep. And so I guess that's kind of represented by the second ability as well.
If he does choose to come down from his perch and fuck your ass up, he's gonna learn something from it.
and that's nice.
Swoops down and, like, ice breaths, you know, some giant creature, shatters it to bits and goes, huh. So that's what your ribs look like. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, this is okay. I would
absolutely
play this card.
Absolutely, dude. I would play the shit out of this card if this wasn't blue. And I think...
Yeah. I mean, do we have any more to
I think
say
about
Sweet really?
Commander for blue-white.
Yes,
I think all of these
yes.
cards would... Well, except for Call the Gun. But we'll get to that in a sec. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I am now going to go into Dragon Lord Silumgar. So, big fat Silumgar, laying on his throne, crocodile motherfucker, is a 3-5 flying death touch for 4 blue-black. So, small, 3-5. I mean, comparing him to Dromoka, who's a 5-7 for, you know, the same converted mana cost. 3-5 is a bit small, but death touch. It's pretty cool. So he doesn't have to invest, you know, time into beefing himself up. He can just, you know, poison you to death. When Dragon Lord Silumgar enters the battlefield, and I'm sure you've all seen this effect, gain control of target creature or planeswalker for as long as you control Dragon Lord Silumgar. One of the first cards they spoil for Dragons of Tarkir, because it's fucking cool.
This guy got
fat. Yeah, he did.
Like, yeah, he's got Death Touch, meaning that his breath weapon is super powerful, but he's only got 3 power, because he's fat. He got fat and lazy. I mean, he's so fat and lazy that he lost Hexproof.
Yeah, right.
Like, he used to be so fast that you couldn't even target him with a spell, and now he just sits there, fat fucker.
He gets people to do shit for him. And I really love the lore they've attached to Silumgar, because he's a lazy ass motherfucker, but he's prone to anxiety a lot, apparently, for a big dragon lord. He gets anxious a lot. He gets really, like, paranoid that people are gonna, like, deal with him, because he's a really, like, ruthless kind of guy. He would do whatever the hell it took to fuck you up. And because of his, because, like, that's kind of how the guy he is, his brood is basically like that as well. They're always fucking each other over to get to better positions of power, and he's like, someone's gonna kill me one day.
Oops.
Kill that guy. Turn him into a zombie. That guy looked at me funny. Kill the shit out of that guy. So they're always, and occasionally he has these, like, moments of paranoia where he just goes mental and starts fucking up the palace. So they hold blood rituals to, like, distract him.
What a madman.
What a mad dragon.
Like, he seems like a proto-Bolas, but he's just not... The mental stability is not high enough to be as formidable as Nicol Bolas. Which is a shame, because I just want to hug him. Is he not the cutest? Like, out of the five of them, I just want to hug Silumgar. He looks like a plush snake with wings.
He's so derpy, you know? And like I said, he's got a belly, and he's crocodile-y, and he's got drool coming from his mouth. He's so adorable in like a horrifying kind of way. He's the one that you just want to roll him on his back and rub his belly. I mean, like Dromoka, you would like respectfully, you know, like stroke right on the face like a majestic horse. But Silumgar is a big puppy.
I mean, he seems like the kind of dragon lord who would roll over for a belly pat as well. Not because he wants
to. Roll over
you.
And
it's sort of as
a belly pat.
Yeah. I'd be happy to do that.
And of course, I mean, we should mention it. I mean, we mentioned this last week that, you know, every man and his dog is talking about this kind of stuff. Silumgar's got Tassigur as a necklace. The
fitting end.
The former Khan of the Sultai has been turned into a zombified necklace. So, yeah.
Yeah, so he just chills there. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Alright, so...
Alright, so our next dragon is Dragon Lord Kolaghan. Okay, who is
amazing artwork. Holy fuck.
Yeah. I really love the art direction for this entire set as well. It's very vibrant as well. Okay, so Dragon Lord Kolaghan is a 6/5 for 6. So it's 4 and a black red. It has flying and haste. Other creatures you control have haste. And that's pretty good. But, second ability. Whenever an opponent casts a creature or planeswalker spell with the same name as a card in his or her graveyard, that player loses 10 life.
I mean, that's... Reading that effect, that hits hard. But, unfortunately, it does have the line of text with the same name. Meaning that this is the first out of this cycle of legendary creatures, and the only of these legendary creatures that... It's kind of bad to run as a commander. Well, not bad, just it loses a lot of its power.
Or any singleton format as well, like singleton cube, for example. But it does grant haste to everything you control. So
as a 6/5 flying haste for 6.
I kind of like the flavor of the second ability though, because all right. So Dragon Lord Kolaghan has already dealt with stuff at this point, okay? And this enemy planeswalker is like, okay, you know what? I did that before. Let's give it another go. Kolaghan's response is, no, you've already done it. Try something else and hit some with a bolt of lightning.
Try harder, man. Come on. You tried that before. I dealt with it. Do it again. Better this time, because it's something else. Do something else.
Once more with feeling.
Because, and this is, again, talking about the lore attached to these guys, Kolaghan, I think, is easily my favorite, lore-wise, because the other dragon lords basically demanded that people follow them. Dromoka is like, look, you're gonna follow me, You're gonna stop that necromancy shit, Abzan. You're gonna do things my way. I'm gonna protect you. Ojutai, you're going to bow before me and I'm gonna enlighten you because I'm the smartest motherfucker in the world. You know, I'm gonna do it nicely, but you're not allowed to say anything against me. Capiche? And Silumgar, of course, you know, tyrant that he is prone to demanding blood rituals and belly rubs. And when we get to Atarka is basically this unfathomable beast of nature that if you're not feeding, she's gonna eat you. So, Colagon, taking over the Mardu clan, didn't demand people followed her. She didn't ask anyone to bow in service. What she did was she said, keep up. And she sped off into the distance, and the Mardu were like, shit, I want to keep up. And they just followed her.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And she doesn't demand service. What she does is she sets an example. And that makes her really, really awesome. So, and it's also cool seeing an aspect to Black Red that's not, like, tyrannical, you know? She doesn't want to, like, crush your face. She's just occupied with her own ambitions.
Yeah.
Colagan gonna do what Colagan does. And if you want to keep up, awesome. That's sweet.
Hell
that's
yeah.
Not lightning breath.
Also, a hasty 6/5 for 6 with flying is pretty good. So, I don't know, like, all these creatures so far have just been solid creatures as well. And they're all cheaper than the original legends. So did you want to talk about Dragon Lord Ataka then?
So Dragon Lord Ataka, the last of the cycle, is a 8/8 flying trample for 5 red-green. It's good. That's good straight up, but there's another ability attached as well. When Dragon Lord Ataka enters the battlefield, it deals 5 damage, divided as you choose, among any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers your opponents control.
I'm gonna say something. And I'm not sure if you're gonna agree with me. Dragon Lord Ataka is strictly better than Palladium Maws. Unless you're running Palladium Maws as a commander for whatever dumb reason.
Yeah.
It's a bigger creature for less. Flying and trample still, and it deals damage when it enters the battlefield. And it doesn't require a repeated echo cost.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, if we're not caring about any commander, you know, I want to run white shenanigans, Dragon Lord Ataka is fucking amazing in comparison to Palladium Maws.
And once again, it shows you just the difference in what we're willing to do with creatures now as well. Yeah, it's 8/8 for 7 far out. That's
8/8
good.
Flying trample for 7.
Yeah.
Like an 8/8 for 7 is pretty cool. An 8/8 that flies is pretty awesome for 7. That's awesome. An 8/8 with flying and trample for 7. What?
With, what is it, lava axe?
Well, it's like... No,
oh, wait, no.
No.
It's divided as you
and
choose
as well.
And it only
hits creatures and planeswalkers. Not players.
Still, though. Still, though. Yeah. It's good.
She's a huge creature that when she comes into play, she, like, fire breaths and just burninates the countryside. Burninating the villagers. Ataka!
Well, if that's not...
No, stop that.
So, yeah, that's the Elder Dragons.
Okay. Big question, Stephen. Okay.
Alright.
I'm gonna get on my reporter face, right? Which you can't tell, because it's a podcast. Whatever. Shut the fuck up. Okay. Do these dragons, from Dragons of Tarkir, hold up to the title of Elder Dragon?
Hell yes.
Fuck yeah. I totally agree.
I absolutely... you know, I would say most of them do.
Yeah?
I'm not sure about Silumgar.
Hmm.
Silumgar is essentially a temporary control magic on a creature. The other cards all have extremely big, badass effects, all repeatable effects as well, like Kolaghan, Ojutai, who have repeatable effects. And then Ataka is massive and extremely powerful. I'm not sure Silumgar quite lives up to Elder. He's still awesome. I'd still play him.
Shit.
But yeah, he got fat. That was it. If he just did a couple push-ups.
You dopey fuck.
If he was a bit... why is his ass not bigger?
Right? I feel he could be like a 3-8.
7. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if he was a 3-6 or even a 3-7, maybe, but 3-5's a bit...
Now, yeah. And like, I mean, it's not our place to be like, well, I think wizards should have done this, because we know what we're talking about. But Silumgar, I feel like, could have had a bit more, like an ability that showed off his, you know, his servants, you know, like doing something like that. Like, you know, say, whenever you, let's say, sacrifice a creature, bring that creature back to the battlefield. As like whenever you sacrifice a creature, you can make a 2/2 zombie, something like that. So like, you know, like whenever he's eating one of his own guys, or you can do something like that, you know, like eat one of your own guys, blow up a guy, something like that.
See, the thing is, right, the Dragon Lords are supposed to be the most badass.
Yeah.
But I look at Dragon Lord Silumgar, there was another card that was spoiled. It's Necromaster Dragon, okay? He's a 4/4 for 3, black-blue. He's a flyer. When it deals combat damage to a player, you may pay 2 colorless. If you do, put a 2/2 black zombie token on the battlefield, and each opponent mills 2. And I honestly would prefer running that to Dragon Lord Silumgar, purely because it's a repeatable effect, it's in, and it makes sense.
And you know what is, of course, like, I mean, if that's your title to that, as your opinion, you know, the thing that, the salt that rubs it in more is, that's the intro pack rare?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, the intro pack rare to you feels like a better effect than the legendary Elder Dragon.
Yeah. And, I mean, of course, people will disagree, and my opinion is just that, but I honestly would prefer running Necromaster Dragon. Or, you know, if Dragon Lord Silumgar had... basically swap text with Necromaster Dragon.
Right.
You know, 3/5 flying death touch, and then maybe, I say half of that ability, you know, combat damage, put a 2/2 on the battlefield. Something like that. I don't know. You're right. It doesn't show off the fact that he's...
I mean, it does show his...
Surrounded by servants.
I want that thing over there. Put that... No, mine. It's mine now. So that's pretty cool. You know, he can steal Jace the Mind Sculptor. You know, steal Planeswalker. I'm gonna kill this Planeswalker and get its ultimate. Haha, it's mine now. I mean, like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
He's a Elder Dragon that can steal the other Elder Dragons.
That is true.
Yeah, I see what you mean. You know, his effect at the very least is the most subtle, least explosive, least impressive. At first glance, we haven't played with any of these cards. I feel like if I'm in the pre-release and I come across someone play with a Dragon Lord Silumgar, I'm going to have a tough time. I'm going to have a really tough time. So,
I think in more, I mean, I'm sure Dragon Lord Silumgar will be amazing in draft and standard, but in sort of, is it Eternal formats?
Yeah.
Whatever, you know, like, Commander and Legacy and whatnot, which are removal heavy as well. I'm not sure it'll hold up there.
I mean,
but anyway,
hypothetical scenario. He's your commander. You're in blue black. You probably got some sack outlets. Play him. Steal someone's commander. Sacrifice it.
Yep. I was gonna say friggin' exploit.
Attach him to a Deadeye Navigator and keep flickering him.
You know, now that you say these things. Well, you're gonna have to keep sacking though. Like, flicker, sack.
Have an ability that, like, Ultra Dementia. Sack a creature, mill someone equal to that creature's power. And it's like, yeah. There's no mana involved, it's just sack creature.
That's pretty good.
So, Elder Dragons. We've talked about the originals, we've talked about the latest ones, and I feel like these new ones really hold up. And I think they definitely hold the title of Elder Dragon to a high standard. They show off green, white, blue, black, and red-green magnificently, I think, with some deviation along the way. I am actually a little bit disappointed that Kolaghan is a legendary creature that doesn't really work in Commander. That's always unfortunate to see. Because I would have loved to run that artwork in foil as my commander.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, R&D does not design legendary creatures exclusively for commander. That is just a thing that happens. That's not something we can ask them to do. Yeah. So, I'm really happy with these guys. They are amazing. They are fantastic. And, I look forward to maybe sneakily seeing one at the back of my pack in the future. Because it's going to get me excited, yeah. Regardless of who it is. If I open an Ojutai, he's in white-blue. He's in probably my least favorite color combination, and I'm going to go, jeez, Ojutai, that's awesome. You know? So that's cool.
That's good. Yeah. That's good stuff. No, I'm quite happy with these overall.
And I now, power-wise... Do any of them compare to Nicol Bolas? I feel like Dromoka does. She's on a much more different access. And if we're talking like 60 card multiplayer, Kolaghan does.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with Dromoka as well. It's good. Like being able to protect yourself and your stuff that well. And with lifelink as a 5/7, it's good.
I hope you know this, Steven. Dromoka, she's gonna go in my Doran deck.
Oh, I would think so.
She's gonna be a 7/7 flying lifelink, can't be countered for 6.
Hell yeah.
And you can't cast spells during my turn.
Also, are you gonna put Dromoka's command in your Doran deck?
It's possible.
Because I don't know if
Dromoka's command is quite good enough for commander, but yeah. Because fight is an awkward mechanic for Doran because it cares about power.
Oh, it absolutely does, doesn't it? Damn it!
But I mean, you know, someone plays Blasphemous Act, and I'm like, prevent all the damage that it would deal, and put a +1/+1 counter on my Doran. Sure, that sounds all right.
It's okay.
Yeah, so I think. That's our main topic done for this week. And I think there's a little bit of something that I want to talk about before we go, Stephen. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
Alright. So, ladies and gentlemen, a couple weeks ago, I joked about potentially creating a new format. Casual format. And we've done it. It's happened. And we've called it Coup d'etat. What it is... Working title, we haven't quite figured it out yet, but basically, it's Archenemy. The Archenemy has a 100 card commander deck, and the Archenemy deck, of course. 40 life, playing as though it was commander. The other players have tiny leaders decks, and 25 life, and they have to try and defeat the Archenemy.
So, for those unfamiliar with Archenemy, basically it's gonna be a multiplayer on one format. So, we played it 2-on-1. I think 3-on-1 would probably be a good combination for this. Where the Tiny Leaders team, the Rebels or whatever we're gonna call them, try to take on, you know, the commander player, the Tyrant. They take their turns, together. You know, they have all their main phases and battle phases and draw steps and whatever all together. And on the commander player's turn, the beginning of their turn before their upkeep, I think that's how it works. It's like untap, then they flip a card from the scheme deck, which is basically this collection of just effects that are, they have awesome names. They're all like, very, very like huge, grandiose statements, you know, like...
Like things like sitcom villains would say.
Your inescapable doom. Like,
all shall smolder in my wake.
Even the land shall crumble, all this kind of stuff. And they all have very, very powerful effects that basically weigh the favor of the game in the commander player's turn. But because there's going to be more than one player taking them on, more than one deck, more than one set of life totals, it's a fairly evenly matched game, at the very least in theory. So.
Yeah. So, because what I found playing Arch Enemy is that, because we tend to play Arch Enemy with commander decks anyway, but our commander decks are generally quite powerful, and by the time you get your deck up and running, you've got three decks with equal power, you know, facing off. You've got two on one side and one with an Arch Enemy deck. The two players, the two rebels, if their decks crack off, there's probably very little the Arch Enemy can do to remedy that. Like, EDH, commander decks, quite powerful, and when they crack off and do the thing they're supposed to do, you know, your opponent's likely screwed, and with 2-on-1, the chances are much higher. But with Tiny Leaders is a strange format, because you have to use, you know, you're limited to converted mana cost 3 or less. You're using removal that you probably wouldn't use, because it's all you have access to.
It's also designed to be a one-on-one format as well. Like, at the very least, like, base level. So, you know, as opposed to Commander, where you want your removal to be a bit more wide-sweeping and versatile, your removal in Tiny Leaders is Lightning Bolt, Murder, Terminate, Swords of Plowshare, you know, one-for-one removal that goes, that thing, gone. And, you know, maybe a Naturalize effect kind of thing, like a Corsair Grip. Whereas in Commander, you get to run Wrath effects. You get to run Bounce the Entire Field effects. You get to run Armageddon, all this kind of stuff if you really want to.
Yeah, it makes the Arch Enemy seem more like a grand villain as well. Then being able to play enormous creatures and enormous spells, and you as a tiny rebels have to face off with what little equipment you have. It feels like an epic struggle.
Wonderful. Like, okay, here's the thing. We played this game, like the very, very first, like, rough draft, I guess, of what we're gonna call, of what we're gonna have this format as the other night. And, Steven and I played our Tiny Leaders decks that we have built up against, a friend of the show, Robbie. So I'm playing my Ashling the Pilgrim deck that I talked about on the Tiny Leaders episode. Mono Red. It's all about burninating the countryside and the villages. And Steven, you were playing, Alesha, who smiles at death. Sort of a weenie reanimator deck. And Robbie is playing his green-red, Rasheen Meanderer deck, who is a 4/4 giantess for 4. She's in green-red. And she taps to add 4 mana to your mana pool that can only be used to cast X spells. So basically he runs it in a, Hydra deck. Whole bunch of creatures that are pay X in their mana cost. They enter with X plus and plus encounters, and they're enormous creatures. Sort of a green ramp deck that has huge stompy green things. Backed up with red, removal and powerful effects. Like Wheel of Fortune. I think that's in there.
Yeah, it is.
So, it was a really interesting game because, you know, a 6/6 creature, it's not horrendously large, but when your creatures are decidedly small and you're looking at a Pyroclasm in your hand that deals 2 damage to each creature on the battlefield, you feel really outmatched. You feel like you've brought a short sword to a tank battle. Right? trying to find the appropriate, like, scale. It's not that you're completely outmatched, though, because there are 2 of you, or 3 of you, and you have different angles to go on, and, you know, like, when we were facing down just, like, a single big creature, and, you know, we're trying to figure out how exactly we can do this, and then you top deck, you know, an unconditional removal spell, and you go, ha, kill it. It felt like we'd accomplished something.
That felt so good.
And even then, we were looking
at Phyrexian Hydra, which is a big 7/7 with infect. but it has an effect that when you deal damage to it, prevent that damage and remove a +1/+1 counter from this. I'll put a -1/-1 counter on this Hydra. So it doesn't take a lot of damage, but it gets smaller every time you do. So we were just sitting there planning how to deal with this 7/7 because we've only had tiny removal and tiny ways to deal damage. It was fun. It felt good. We need a proper name for it though. Like Tyrannicide.
Like Uprising. Or something like that, you know?
We're trying to kill a tyrant.
I feel like there's a couple other things we could do to maybe change it up just a little bit. Like, for example, say the commander player, the tyrant, can only play a commander that costs 4 or greater. Different. Because I feel like I'd originally thought, well, maybe we'll make the commander player only play spells 4 or greater. You know, like only play spells that the tiny leaders can't. But I feel like that might make the game weird. Because then the tiny leaders, if they get off to a really aggressive start, have no time to, like, get kicked down. Because then your opponent isn't actually starting doing anything until turn 4.
But it's good. It's really good fun.
And I think that's something that we're going to be working on. Getting a name for, maybe working out a couple of the kinks of the format. And I'll have a deck that's better suited for that coming in the mail.
Hopefully.
Sig Grim Cutthroat. Badass.
And the other thing is, for quite a long time now, I've had a huge Excel spreadsheet. There is another casual variant of Magic the Gathering called Chaos Magic, where you included an additional step. So you go untap, Chaos step, and then upkeep. And what happens is, during your Chaos step, you roll a die. And you basically, based on the result of the die, you get a random effect. Sort of like Plane Chase, where you have a global effect, but except it happens just once. Just that once. You know, things like discard a card, or draw a card, or everyone sacrifices a permanent, or, you know, creatures get a keyword. And I'm busy working on it. I've created a Python program where you press enter, and will generate a random effect for you. That's fantastic. But, if you guys are keen to give that a go, why not assemble a Chaos Magic effect list as well? That's a good thing to play around with your board.
Chaos Magic is a fantastic way to play. And for anyone familiar with anything like Bunny Plunge Chase, it plays very similarly to that, in that there's a whole bunch of just effects going on, you know, and can change turn to turn. And yeah, good fun.
But anyone who's interested in Chaos Magic and magic where random effects happen each turn, check out an article by Bruce Richard called Truly Chaotic. It's on the old Magic the Gathering site. And that gives you a good primer on what it is and how to play it. And, you know, there's even a basic list to go off if you just want to test
it. I'll throw that in the show notes.
Yeah. So, once again, it's a casual format, but it's just a nice way to shake up a game as well. When you get tired of playing 60 card decks and having very similar things happen each game, throw in Chaos Magic. It does liven things up.
Nice.
Yeah.
Alright, well, I think that sounds like a good episode to me.
I think I'm done.
We talked some Elder Dragons. We got up too goddamn early, and yeah, I know. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. That's not unreasonable for other people, but fuck off. Alright? It's Sunday.
It's Sunday. Like, nothing happens in Perth on a Sunday, except sleep-ins.
Yeah. Perth doesn't start till, like, 2 p.m.
And that's on weekdays.
I bet if we had Chris on the show, he'd be like, you guys aren't up before 3? What?
Yeah.
It's a man that goes to bed at, like, 9 o'clock, and he's up at, like, 7 in the morning, and he's done working by, like, 6 p.m. I sometimes don't even start work until 6 p.m.
Yeah.
Alright.
Aww.
Well, it's been a good episode, Squires. If you want to contact us, do it, as always, at mtgsquirecast@gmail.com. Always love to hear emails from you guys. If you want to like us on Facebook, Facebook. You want to like us on Facebook, we are SquireCast. All this information is in the show notes. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at SquireCast. We've got that all up and running now, and we are a fish on the Twitterverse. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, we totally have a Twitter. That's
right. We
totally
have a Twitter.
Twitter us.
Tweet
Twitter.
At us or something. We don't know how this shit works. Retweet us and favorite us and hashtags and... I don't know, man.
We have three followers on Twitter, right? And we're kind of hoping to get more, too. So don't be afraid to tweet us. Yeah. I mean, we just post random cards as well, or just stuff that's happening. So, give it a look-see. It's not super interesting, but...
Yeah, we got things to say, I think. Yeah.
Ish. And to all you Callum fans out there, we'll try and have him next week too. And all you Roberto fans, we'll try and actually have him on the show.
Yeah.
Sometime. Because we dropped the ball on that one.
Yup.
So, once again, sorry Roberto, and thanks for listening to this episode, if you are listening to this episode. But, yeah.
Straight so, in the meantime, Squires... maybe give MTG Focus a listen. That's Roberto's podcast on the MTG Cars Network. Seems to be really, really kicking off. He's like two episodes in, and I'm just going to put this out there. He's got playmats and sleeves and polo shirts on the way.
Wow.
So, I'm a little bit jealous. Just a bit.
That's right, we're doing alright though. Like, we got three followers on Twitter.
Yeah,
it's
man,
okay.
And, you know, got requested for a, mystery spot on an upcoming podcast. Someone might have asked for me by name. So look forward to that.
That's excited. Can't wait until that happens. Anyway, yeah.
Shit-eating grin on this, my face.
When is this episode coming out, by the way? Because last week's episode should be coming out. In the next two or three days. Is this episode going up this week at some point, or is this next week's episode?
That's definitely the plan. So this is the 15th of March as of now. Really meant to get episode 18, 19, whatever the hell it was, the previous episode up before that. I'm assuming you'll probably have listened to that before this goes up, and this should be up.
Yeah.
Before the 17th? Before the 18th. We'll say that.
Oh, we hope so. Yep. We hope so.
Just a matter of getting the time to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Squires.
Anyway.
Anything you want to say before we
fuck
off, Stephen?
Thanks for listening, everyone. And,
got nothing. Cool. All right, Squires. It's been good joining you this early in the morning. I'm very much like Steven. I think I'm going to, conk myself out on the couch. I'm probably going to have a dog cuddle up on top of me, and I'm going to finish some editing very sleepily. So, it's been good. Talk some Elder Dragons, talk to new format, and, we'll catch you next time, Squires, on the next episode of Squirecast.
Woo!
Woo!
Let me just get it over my tongue for a second here. Just strip right over it. Okay, cool.
I can't stop listening to this, and I apologize in advance.
Botany is passed on. Botany is passed on. Is a
costume. It brings up so many questions.
Botany's passport. Yeah, there's an edit wall because it seems that half the people who get to edit that page want to keep it, and the other half don't want to keep it. But they, and everyone's unsure as to whether it's a joke or not. It's great.
I'm guessing it is, right?
It's I don't know. That's the thing. The audio has been on the website since 2013.
Yeah.
Right. And it's you know, that's how long it's been, the Edit War's been going. Like, reading some of the edits, there was sort of a informal vote as well, and one of them was a extremely strong keep. Wii U, here comes the fun police. Yeah. But there's also a strong keep. I am blind. I have learned a lot about Bhutanese passport today. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. Yeah.
We've got Roberto on this show.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah.
There's an article called, whoa, I can't remember, Truly Chaotic. Sorry.
You did the thing where you just went dead silent, and then everything that happened within 5 seconds got crammed into half a second.
Came out all at once.